Sorry. But there is wine tasting.
Well, I was trying to come up with a reason for where everybody else is.
Well, they might have been at wine tasting. That's true. First weekend that they're allowed.
All right.
Shall we turn it on?
Sure.
Is it on?
It's on.
Oh, I'm looking at a red light.
It made a different noise than it normally did.
Sure. It might have been mine on the side screen, right?
Oh, that was your phone.
Okay.
All right. Well, now that we've recorded all that nonsense, I'll order the regular meeting and special public hearing of North Bend Planning Commission Thursday, August 8th, 2013, 7 o'clock at City Hall. Minutes of the previous meeting. On the motion.
Motion to approve as written.
Second.
Second. It's a tie.
Second. We'll give the second to Bruce. They were tied. Any corrections, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Minutes. All right. Public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anyone here from the public wishing to speak on an item not on the agenda? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually just came to hang out with some local heroes in here as you guys are building the foundation of North Bend, and you're actually heroes, so I'm happy about that, and I'm looking forward to kind of a swift meeting to get back to the celebration to the farmer's market.
The wine tasting. We heard about that.
Honey tasting.
Okay.
Nice. Thanks, Travis.
You're welcome.
Anyone else wishing to speak on a non-agenda item? All right. Item four is the public hearing. Just to show this, if members of the public, are you here for the public hearing on Tanner Junction?
Yes.
Okay, great. So usually the way we start a public hearing, and I'll just very quickly, as commissioners here know, I always like to ask for transparency's sake if anyone here objects to any of the commissioners taking part in this hearing. It's not really a requirement, but if you did, if any commissioner here has any reason that they need to disclose a conflict of interest regarding the matter before us.
I'm aware.
Super. Then we'll give it to staff to give us an overview and then open the public hearing.
Okay. So we discussed this overlay proposal at our last meeting as an introduction. And this is a proposal for a property. I also have copies if anybody would like, of the actual language and then the map, which shows the area that we're talking about. And this was a applicant-driven overlay proposal. And we're calling it the Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District. So it's comprised of about 30 acres of property. And the proposal is, currently the zoning is EP1, Employment Park 1. It would still have that underlying zoning. But the southern, essentially the southern half of the properties would also allow for HDR, High Density Residential. And to the south of 136th Street is single-family residential that's outside of city limits right now. And the properties are near the junction of Tanner Road. So there would be the Tanner Trail and landscaping along the frontage. One or possibly two potential access roads going perpendicular through the properties, and then also a trail connection on the southern end. The EP1 allows a variety of mostly light industrial type uses, office uses. It does allow residential on the second story. And then the HDR, high density residential, obviously is just that. It's duplexes, triplexes, apartments could be. And so the applicant came to us, just based on having the land for a number of years. The market really, they felt, wasn't there was nothing popping out to get the employment, and they thought it would be a nice combination of to have the residential, to have that buffer between the single family, and they had actually hoped to possibly have all of it potentially go to residential, but as the Planning Commission talked about and we've supported and talked about is, you know, it's important still to maintain some of that employment park along North Benway and just within the city overall. The overlay, you know, gives us a chance to have some certainty for both sides of the development, you know, for us, the city, and the developer and people around. It's one of the last larger pieces of land that we have in EP1. We do have other EP1 up by the Nintendo properties and up that way, which couldn't be developed until sewer was extended out as far as those limits go. And really, you know, this is just kind of our overlay proposal. The market's going to drive, you know, what's really developed on the land, I think. We did receive a comment letter from Cindy Costa. I don't remember if I forwarded it to you guys. It just came this week. But I did talk to her as well. Maybe, is that not you? And she just had consideration for the trail. Right now she takes her horses through there. So I'll pass that out. Yes. So wanted to know just the width of nothing would be changing on the King County portion. And that's the other thing I can mention. We did meet with King County about their trail corridor and trying to coordinate that with the Tanner Road, the Tanner Trail, the future roads that would come in, and we would, and that's part of the proposal, is that it would provide a safer trail connection, more perpendicular to the road instead of kind of oblong, and that would be important. And it would also provide a few parking spots for future trail users. So.
Is anybody clear on what her access is, what she's suggesting here?
She just wants access to
Yeah.
So there's not an existing location she's discussing. She just wants
to. No, and when I talked to her, you know, I mentioned that trail connecting from 136 and then to the King County, and then also that the Tanner Trail would obviously be maintained. And, I mean, she didn't seem to have any concerns after I talked to her, but I just wanted you to know that I received that in writing, so that's part of the record. So,
is the Tanner Trail purchase, acquisition, whatever we're going to call that, is that done now?
Well, yeah, and this property actually owns the Tanner Trail, but as part of our development conditions, if they own it or if the city ends up owning it, it's standard, you know, what's going to be there, a 10-foot landscape and a 10-foot trail. So.
But isn't that, it's up to what, the Rails trustee kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the...
Yeah.
In this case here, though, it's not...
He owns it.
He owns it.
Right.
That's not the norm throughout. Usually it is still...
Of connectivity, if it's the trail to, or a block of a trail with neither in open, that's kind of crazy, but
yeah.
It doesn't sound like it's coming through.
No.
We've already granted the city a 10-foot wide mm-hmm. trail easement down the entire frontage of North Bend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say in public here, we should hold our questions for staff. I just wanted to make sure they give us the overview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we should move to public comment first. So, Bill Moffitt, correct?
Yes.
Bill, so your full name and address for the record.
Bill Moffitt, 2144 Westlake Avenue, North Seattle, 98109. On behalf of CrownLinks LLC and North Bend Industrial Park LLC, the owners on this property.
The floor is yours.
She pretty much described it.
Oh,
unless there's questions, there's a few things that I would like to comment about. Is one of them was access. Is we've already got three access points on these parcels. Simply because they're already split up into individual parcels. There's four parcels out there. So in case we sell them individually, each parcel has access to North Bend Way through the existing three accesses that we have. So there's already three accesses out there, and that's two of them are Tanner Road, and we only have one for the project that is through our property. So we're accessing Tanner Road to the east, Tanner Road to the west, and then one private access somewhere in the middle. And then the other issue I had was the exception of single-family detached homes. I'd like to see at least an opportunity to provide a site plan for limited single-family. They're going to be high-density single-family. And our thinking was going from single-family residential on like 10,000 square foot lots across the street to the higher density single-family 3,500, 4,000 square foot lots, and then transition into multifamily from that. We don't mind just going straight into a multifamily or apartment style complex, but we just thought the possibility for limited single family would also be a feature that would blend in out there. So I didn't want to be precluded totally from single family. I'd like to see some language to where it could be possibly a limited number of single families that we could put out there on the south side only, and not, you know, try to make the whole thing single family detached, because that's not our plan at all. That's about the only comment I had on the staff's report.
Thank you very much. Travis, your name's on here again. Did you want to speak on this particular item?
Oh, I'll just be happy to learn on this particular item. I do enjoy the trail that's already in place there, and I'd certainly welcome to see some structures alongside it.
Okay. I don't know if I'm going to get this right. Is it Daylin? Mm-hmm. Daylin Davidson, if you want to speak on this issue. Or yeah. Questions, whatever you would like to.
Yeah, forgive me, I don't know the rules here. Yeah. We just were concerned. We own the property right across the river from this, and so our riverfront looks, right, our property looks right at this. So I guess my first question was, what's the height limit on these buildings that could potentially be built there?
Could you tell us your address?
Just 13427 446th Avenue Southeast.
13427?
Yeah.
Typical height restrictions, 30?
35
feet.
Okay. And I was curious why no environmental impact study was required for you.
Well, this is just a conceptual plan, so there's no proposal. There's not even a detailed site plan. It's an overlay, so it just kind of gives a concept. And so when there is a proposal, it would have the environmental review.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my third question, was like, how far off is this?
Again, I think that the applicant is using it as a marketing tool, just to say, we have the additional use they're getting, the change is that it would allow some residential. And they've gone through an overlay process. Still, they could propose to change things and do a development agreement, or like I said, it could be developed all like it's currently zoned in the EP1. So it's totally dependent on the market, and I don't know if the applicant has any better sense of timing, but
we don't have any definite end use for it at all. What we're trying to do is make it a little more user friendly for mixed uses, and it just makes sense to put some residential out there because it borders right up to residential already, and then keep the business portion of it out on North Bend Way.
I think we just add that we probably are pro for the residential side of it and expanding that more, just simply because the river is there, but it does sound carries pretty easily across that river. I think there have been a couple of festivals out there that we've heard pretty loudly across there.
Can we get your name just for the record?
Yeah, Brett Baker. Yeah, and you can say if you disagree with that.
Oh, yeah. megaphones and bikers and...
Yeah, so residential is a good use for, from our perspective.
Thank you.
Okay. Sherwood, were you? Okay. All right, that's everyone here from the public wishing to speak, and so with that, we will close the public hearing and open up for discussion at the commissioner's discretion. Discuss this now or take it up at a later time. It's your choice.
I'll just have a couple questions, discussion or otherwise. So the thing that occurred to me is I was reading through this for the third or fourth or fifth time, I don't remember which. In most places when there's a request in zoning, the first thing you kind of filter through is this increase in density or decrease in density? Is a, you know, the idea of applying for something that goes from EP1 to residential, particularly if it was low density, that's an absolute down zone, if you'd agree. Mm-hmm. And that's usually something easily done relative to going the other way. So mm-hmm. this applicant really, even though it's kind of a partial over the area that he's talking about, he's kind of going on a lower density concept versus what other people might perceive as a increased density or, you know, a block warehouse building. Mm-hmm. So
true.
From that perspective alone, I look at this as kind of a good balance for what could be there. And to the point we just heard about somebody looking across the river at residential, that seems to be a nice balance as well. You kind of, instead of guaranteeing pretty much by sticking to the absolute definitive zoning that's there now, you're kind of buffering and letting it balance itself out. So that was my comment. And the Tanner Trail thing still plays in my head about making sure that if we're spending time making sure that this property is burdened by connecting to a trail, let's make sure the trail's going to actually be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have.
I'm just going to say I appreciated the developmental capacity table because looking at that, we certainly do lack a bit of HDR development in our city, but also we consider something more of a mixed use as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for that lot would be appropriate as well. Just clarification, the current overlay that's, I guess it's, not without a page number, but it's titled figure 18.10.025-1 Tanner Landing MPOD mm-hmm. layout map. Is that the current overlay?
That's the current overlay. Yeah, that's across the street. Kind of across the street, yeah.
A little further east.
Yeah.
West.
West. A little further west.
Oh, yeah, that one's west. And so we're doing, yeah,
oh, that's west, though.
Mm-hmm. You okay. can see it on the current proposed one. It starts off in a
that's the,
skinny
yeah.
triangle and on the other side of Southeast North Bend Way, and then it goes off the page.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good trick. You just put the cardinals around, and nobody knows where you are anymore.
Bruce?
No, I just would like to see the residential buffer along that trail and the river if they're going to put that in. It makes the logical sense to buffer the river and the trail then to put commercial right up against the.
So just to clarify, that's not the current proposal. The current proposal is the opposite, that the residential is on the south side to buffer adjacent residential.
I'm saying south, this bottom, the
oh,
south
okay.
trail leads around.
Yeah.
And along the river.
That's not river right there, though. That's the
Snoqualmie Valley trail. It's the same color
oh,
as
okay.
the river. Yeah.
All right. I've gone color.
And it's rarely underwater.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So still
January
along the
day.
Trails. Hmm. Just... that corner. I thought it was the river. I'm sorry. I was going to say, I don't remember a river crossing.
So my question, and I'm sure it's here, Mike, but help zone me in. I had asked at the last meeting of the valley, we make this change and make the other proposed change to EV1. Where were we in acres for EV1 and 2, and where would we be as far as development?
I don't know that myself. I didn't even look at that.
Yeah, it's on the first page, kind of the summary, on the last paragraph there on that page. So the comp plan showed we have 367 acres of EP1 zone land in the city and the UGA, and that was 10% of our total land area. The Tanner Junction took essentially 15 acres out of EP1 and added it, that's what the proposal would be, to add it to the HDR. HDR comprised 1% of our land area. And then you had asked about the Tanner Landing overlay. That was 21.35 acres previously, all EP1, and now it allows for a mix of residential, office, and some light industrial, so you didn't lose all the employment potential there. But it definitely has a residential component. And then the East North Bend overlay, the one at Trucktown, it still has the same underlying EP2 zone, which is can be a little bit heavier industrial. It also has additional neighborhood business uses, so some more retail. And then it has the 12.5 acres in commercial truck center. So basically, I kind of figured 15 acres for Tanner Junction going to HDR, and then the 21 from Tanner Landing is about 36 acres, and dividing that into our total of 367, it's 9.8%. So with the Tanner Junction and the Tanner Landing, not really counting the East North Bend, because that's an EP2 and a commercial truck center, about 9.8%.
So I'm making sure I'm following the math. We're at 367.
Yes.
These three changes being proposed, 52 acres, 21-some acres, 12-some acres, about 85 acres, right?
No.
Am I misreading?
Yeah. The 52 is the amount of HDR, so that's a different number. The numbers are 367 total.
Added to the 52 acres.
Yeah, so 367 acres total of EP1 minus, we're taking out 15 for our Tanner Junction, approximately, I'm just guessing, based on the map. And then minus 21.35, which was Tanner Landing, if you just took that all out, which is 36 acres. So we're losing 36 acres out of 367. Which is about 9.8% of the EP1.
Alright, so if those figures, so about 10%, 9%, 9-10%.
Our total job capacity then, the next thing was 2,271 jobs in the EP1. 9.8%, is of that, if that means anything, is 231 jobs. So that we could be losing if you just take an average of all these assumptions. This was done in 2007. We're getting new targets next year. Starting this year, maybe we'll get our new target numbers. But as you can see in the one we had before, we had we were way over our job capacity. We had the total job capacity of 7,761 jobs, and our target, let's see, I don't know if we have a target. Our target was 1,125, and we were showing we had the potential to have 7,761 new jobs. So, the targets could change, but based on this, we were well above.
changed since at all, right? So what I recall is the applicant expressing the desire for single-family housing on that southernmost portion, but that's not been changed in any way for the overlay. And there had been some mention of retail, so that's not been added into this.
And there was a mention of mixed use also tonight. Mixed use is not allowed in EP1. Second story or above residential is allowed, but a mixed use where you could have residential with commercial or just in any sort of configuration isn't currently allowed.
Okay. And remind me, in the high density residential, that does not necessarily compel multifamily buildings. You could build single family.
You can't build single family.
Yeah.
Higher densities.
At the higher density. Yeah.
So the current proposal had HDR except for the single family.
Oh, okay. So it was excluding.
We had taken it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right.
So again, I'm kind of saying the same thing. I think I said earlier. If this were approved, then the change really would allow anything, including the area that is reallocated for high density, HDR, could still be used as EP1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a, like I said, to me it sounds like a great balance as long as we get to go through the actual application process when the buildings are discussed,
mm-hmm.
setbacks, et cetera.
The Planning Commission won't, but they will be.
No, I understand. Yeah, I trust that we've already done that
mm-hmm.
for the original records, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've critiqued that.
And that, you know, that's kind of the intent of this, is that we were trying to simplify it as much as we could where it'll just go with the zone. So if you're developing a use that's an EP1 use, it would just go with all the bulk and dimensional standards that we already have in the code, not creating new. The same with the residential.
Yeah.
So is any of the current permit activity of all the single-family residents HDR, do you know?
No.
None of it is.
None of it. I think the newest HDR would probably be Rock Creek Ridge.
Yeah.
In the 90s or?
Yeah.
You know, we have a few infill duplexes that have come in and things like that, but.
All right. Of any size, there's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's certainly some development about to have the newest duplexes, I understand, mm-hmm. it's been approved, right? So,
it's in process.
In process.
Yeah, to see if it's that first.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that brings me right back to a point I was going to make earlier regarding our reference for employment.
Mm-hmm.
2006-07 data was probably collected in 2004-05.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we went in moratorium, it's probably thrown these numbers back to the point where they're going to be current today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I question the accuracy, but at the same time, logic says, well, actually,
mm-hmm.
they're probably closer than they would if we'd done it in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, we'll be undergoing a review of all that in detail here when we get our new buildable lands information and targets.
I'm feeling like we need more specifics from staff about what it is we're actually. As I read through the bullets of the overlay, it strikes me there's a lot more detail here than the simple concept of we're actually creating a downzone process in the effect of what's happening. You know what I mean? We're mentioning Truck Town. There's a whole lot of different things.
I think you're on Tanner Junction.
Sorry, I was reading my old notes. So that's kind of what I'm saying. I'm thinking of a motion. What are we being productive about other than recommending this go to council for approval or whatever we're going to say? Is it there yet? Can they even deal with it if we send it to them?
I think it's pretty consistent with the level of detail that the other overlays had.
Okay.
and, you know, we can definitely go over it, you know, a bit more. I can print up a large copy of the parcel, and we can kind of think through things or jot down things if you'd like. I mean, it's definitely an option. I think Mr. Chair kind of went over the big kind of issues is, you know, I guess the uses. What are your thoughts on the uses? And everybody seems to be in favor of the high density. So we have kind of the question of, is any single family okay?
So I guess I'll share what's been, you know, what I was contemplating. I was, you know, stated as part of the comments to a motion, but I've stated many times that I'm concerned about the lack of high density residential that we have in relationship to our low density, and so this action, although it troubles me some to be losing more commercial space, I find myself more in support of it because of boosting the opportunity for the high density residential. And I think staff's brought forward some reasonable conditions around how this overlay would be treated. It certainly does open up the options for the Wharton landowner. I think we still have, you know, full clear understanding that it can fully develop as commercial property under the EP1 allowable uses. But if we end up with a mix of that commercial use and high density, I think that's an overall positive for the city. So, you know, I find myself leaning towards support in that fashion.
Well, I feel the same way. And given the fact that we're actually not giving up, if this was creating a situation where it restricted a portion of EP1 to something other than EP1, then I'd have another issue. But I think we're actually just creating more opportunity instead of reducing that. So I'll put it out there. I move we accept this as written and move it on to council for approval.
Motion and a second.
Second.
Can't beat again, Gary.
Bruce, he's on top.
He was taking a breath.
Any final comments, thoughts?
I'll just say I think I agree with the position of the chair that it does create a balance and a need, our need for HDR, and while still providing the EP1 development. So I'm in favor of it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimous. I do vote. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see here. I'm sure I don't lose anything. Agenda item number 5.
I think there's still a wine tasting going on.
Yeah.
If you can hurry,
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks.
Thank you. Agenda item 5, Planning Commission discussion recommendation amendments to the comprehensive plan land use designation map and zoning map concerning the Washdot Center Pit property. This addresses docket item number 4 from our 2013 docket list. I know this has been on our agenda a couple of times. We're at the point of deliberation. I think a few questions have been asked. So I'll open it up for discussion. A member of the public wanted to speak about this.
I have a question. Look at my name. Sherwood Corson, 13710460, First Place Southeast. It seems to me that I live out there, and I noticed that you talk about traffic and on-site parking and traffic impacts, and just kind of waved off to another developer study. I think there's been plenty of conversation that people have requested that 140th become the study area rather than the street that all of these projects are identified and connected to. And what's happened over the years is that it's a study area, and some people study the impacts on 140th. Again, moving into nearly 50 residential units on 140th. That particular site has some fairly significant engineering issues related to the impact of that curve and the travel of the roadbed access and so forth, which seem to be mitigated by connecting up to adjacent properties in the future. But between now and the future, that's a dangerous curve. It's a downhill. It's blind. It's in a, you know, it's in a meandering street. And coming up or going down, the west 50% of that doesn't really lend itself to safe access.
Sure, but can you point right behind you at the curve you're talking about?
Right there, that one.
That was pretty good, sure.
That was close. That was
pretty well there.
You see where 140th comes down here?
Yeah.
That is kind of what it is.
So the downhill is,
it's a chicane,
right,
is what it is.
Yeah.
And so it also is an uphill chicane. Mm-hmm. And that's a dangerous curve. We brought that up in the Tanner, the first
Tanner Wood.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, the city engineer just kind of waved it off. It's no big deal. It's a big deal. And the energy that it would take to correct that is significant. It's not that it can't be corrected, but it needs to be identified as a significant event in the transportation corridor. And if you add one more car to it, especially on the west half of 140th, the frontage, it's a dangerous spot. I don't know how many of you travel with that, but many of us have been using that end of 140th as a result of the truck impacts. And it keeps increasing. Probably more important than anything is school's going to start pretty soon. And as much as people wave off that whole impact, the demographic of the Twin Falls Middle School is going to increase a minimum of 40%. And it's tough enough, it's impacted enough right now without those new students. And many of those new students come from a long way away. And if you're out on the streets asking people who live on Snow Quarry Ridge, for example, these kids are going to go to the full middle school. They're going to drive their kids to school. And I think it would be important before you load on any more residential in that 140th corridor to do a corridor study, because now you've got the Goldsmith 12 and the Lynn Minor 28 and soon to be Sagali 140 or whatever it is. And that is a whole another corridor issue where the Tanner Road comes in at that acute angle. That is more than significant. So when you start to patch all this stuff together, including the issue that you just approved, which I strongly support, and I support your comments, Mr. Chair, I think it's time to grab a hold of that and say, we need to look at this before we add more opportunity to it that some developer can go out and study on an individual basis. The individual studies all seem to be okay, no big deal. Collectively, when all of that comes crashing together, it's going to be a major issue. And then add the demographic and the type of traffic, you know, moms and kids twice a day, to the middle school. Those moms and kids are not going to go up through Trucktown. They're going to go up through 140th because it's the shortcut without the traffic. I strongly recommend, you know, before you move forward and give an opportunity to build another 50 homes on that street, that you do a regional study. And I suggest that you get your counters out there on the first day of school, and you'll see a significant event that I know that spot study done because there were some questions about it on the minor project. And it was a spot study. There were no cameras or people sitting in the cars and doing the work. It was a very short study. I think it's time to get the cameras out there. And if you don't have them, granted, and I'll pay for them. It's significant. And it's something that you're not going to be able to put in the, you know, throw it in the reverse and say, oh, well, we messed up. All of a sudden, now we've got to leave 250 houses out there, and gee, it is a problem. But that will be after the fact. It's time to focus on that now. And now is when school starts. So you're going to see a tremendous, the dynamic of traffic change. And I know that it's a study of PM peak, the previous always talk about PM peak. The AM peak is an anomaly out there. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed. When, if you go back to the submittals to the hearing examiner for John Day on the Tandem 1 and 2, that 50 mile an hour North Bend Way coming down to the intersection of 140th, the site distance, the stopping distance, and all that. If you go in and do the analysis based on size of truck and distance of stopping, that somebody's going to get whacked again. You know, there was one guy that got launched in his SUV and stuck in a tree and being hit by one of the commercial trucks. I think it's time to pay attention to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
True for sharing his comments, the Board of Commission's information, the proposed sites that he mentioned, Sigali, Tanner Pit, Minor, and Goldsmith, I did that at 244 units for the city's
I'm just, I'll add a footnote because I recall having lots of traffic study conversation, and I think the city does own rubber band counters because I think they were employed, deployed and employed, I guess, at certain locations. And, I mean, I think it's a great point. We every city does that. You kind of put the onus on the developer at the submittal to figure out his traffic issues, and then mitigation plays in, but that scale is so small that you're not really factoring in where the cars end up as they travel through town. You're kind of missing something, so I'll second that point.
Sure. This is one of those where we had Scott here. We'd be getting the traffic engineer's input. Would be a very good night for him to be with us. I know from my own history that a robust traffic study does reach out to all likely intersections impacted. So they do actually come even into downtown and other locations. But I think one of the things that certainly does capture my concern, so I guess a question for staff to the point, the main point I feel that Sherwood was making is that, and we've talked about it over time, is that we do, by a matter of policy and procedure, we do take up issues one at a time as a submittal. And we do just happen to have a rather interesting occurrence where we've got a pretty tight pocket of applicants in the field that we're aware of. And I'm not aware of anything within code that would compel the type of overall study that...
it's always just based on the impact of that development.
It's based on that impact of that development. Yeah, and so I guess I'm looking for, is there a way we can incentivize the applicants to work together, is there some way we fashion something in our recommendation that this should precede a preliminary plat for any further development there waivers, you know, some trigger that we would take that broader view.
The traffic studies that the individual plats submit have to take in growth factors. They do take in growth factors and known developments coming down the road. So when we have given them that information, we make sure that's put into it. So kind of like Cedar Falls in Maloney Grove, I mean, that development didn't trigger anything to be needed to be done at that intersection. And then SciView came in and they were another 24 lots, and they didn't trigger it. But at some point, there will be the one who, and it could be a smaller development or a much larger that just happens to be the one that bumps it over that threshold. So the traffic studies are counting all these.
Also, you recall when we updated our transportation element, the traffic studies that were done during that process also accounted for these projects, or the equivalent of these projects based on their density. And those, I don't believe our transportation element studied the 140th and North Bend Way intersection, but it did study some of the other intersections around it. So that,
right.
That could be
it. And I recall that, well, I guess, but related to that, and I recall that study, and that is sort of the broader look, you know, that's being spoken to, but the, what I'm assuming it would not have taken into consideration, but correct me if this was already on the table, and was, is when, you know, both of the items on our agenda tonight are looking at changing zoning, you know, and they both happen to actually be downzoning, which increases certainly car traffic, right? So that's probably not part of what was looked at.
It depends. I mean,
it totally depends on the nature of the use that goes in. So if it's a high employment generated use,
right? You know, you may have much higher peaks morning and evening. Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Could you clarify for me something you said where the permitting process is going to take into account the available uses or the permits in process or the proposed uses?
I think it's 5% growth factor and then the projects in the pipeline. So
like the
Tanner
Pit that we just approved, he has no firm project in place. So how does that, it's currently EP1?
Well, we have a conceptual plan, which is where the 50-ish lots are coming from. So if somebody... if somebody were to come in, or Sagali, we would say, well, we have this potential. You need to put it in as 50. Okay. And that's our best guess at this time. So.
And it was somewhere months back where I think it was Ron Garrow came from the school district to talk about the change in the campus structure for the high school and the consolidation of two middle schools where Twin Falls was going to swell to, I don't know, 800-something. Enrollment. Mm-hmm. Does that at all get captured somewhere?
That, yeah. To relate it, the growth studies that we did assumed a elementary school at that site.
Along with the middle school.
Along with the middle school. The elementary school hasn't happened, but the middle school has increased.
Okay.
So until the elementary school goes in, then it would have mm-hmm. an additional impact because mm-hmm. now you have a school, middle school that's maxed out,
mm-hmm.
and now you're going to add elementary school into the.
And it's a lot of what ifs.
Yes,
because the assumption is that if you do go forward with building that elementary school, then you're going to reconfigure again, and what is now overflow at the middle school will actually drop. Right. So. I don't have the crystal ball, and I don't know what the school districts think of it.
Let's just talk about the high school remodeling and bringing those back.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think
next year's
a lot of unknowns, but it's great. I appreciate the reminder that the studies and the initial plan was for a second school.
Has there been talks about putting another road connector from North Bend to 140th, or is that...
Yeah, that's part of the overlay district for the It was in our packet.
In the truck.
Yeah, the truck count overlay. The North Bend.
Just north.
East overlay district. Which is something that, I guess, if you think about that as residential, maybe we change that design and not put it on 140th.
Well, the idea with that connector was that it can help funnel traffic off of 140th rather than that's right, the full length access process.
So, yeah, you're giving them
another
right now, the east or the west, there's no alternative. But by adding that other one, it gives them an alternative to not go through that curve. Especially with trucks.
Isn't the road considered a collector, and isn't there some legislation that came out of this body that indicated that that would not be for trucks, it would be for local trucks only? I know for sure that there is. I mean, the cumulative effect of all of this is going to come and bite somebody, and the somebody is going to be the people who are living up there. It's not going to be the next guy who can't build. Issue is a real issue. It was an issue with Gannon. Those intersections are tough. That road is narrow. And in fact, if you take a look at Tannery 1, the way they've established the right of way in there, it's a 50 foot right of way. See, it's ridiculous to even run big trucks through there. And now it's the shortcut to school. It has been for the last few years. And it will be the shortcut to the school for the next 40% of the demographic that's included in that that isn't bringing the coming on the bus.
Yeah.
Please keep this conversation.
Is it within our authority though to ask for a traffic study for that area, for that intersection area, wherever the engineer thinks it's best, so we can get some data where we are now, and then that makes permitting a little bit more exact for the use of the road?
Well, I think there's two things, and really probably staff better to address it, but there's two ideas in my head about how that could go about. How would you?
Well, I think it's something we can
ask.
I don't know if I'd feel fair conditioning this particular development on that, because that's more a city project. Mm-hmm. It's something the city should look at.
Yeah, I'm just asking in general how to make
well,
something like that.
So that kind of goes to my first suggestion, which was this body to make a recommendation to council, either separately or as part of whatever action we take on this issue, encouraging them to make funds available for this a study to be done of that nature.
Sounds good.
Most likely, you know, outside of that, it would fall to the plat process, and only to the extent that their traffic mitigation study needs to be done.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I'd like to make a motion that the City of North Bend conduct a traffic study for the Southeast 140th Street and North Bend Way interchange, coinciding with the start of the annual school year.
Well said. Second.
So, motion, help me here with this reading, that a traffic study be conducted at the intersection of 140th and East North Bend Way.
Southeast 140th.
That study to take place coinciding with the start of the school year, 2013.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Discussion.
I think it makes sense. It puts the onus on the council to go, we've actually got a timeline. And it makes the point that I think we're trying to make, which is this may be getting overlooked. And because it keeps coming up again in various forms. You know, first the focus was actually truck town. And then it kind of migrated, oh, by the way, that really truck town's an issue because there's residential areas next to it. And we throw in this school conversation. So that part of town to me seems like a very good area to say, let's pay attention to this traffic, because that's where a lot of our permits are going to be getting issued soon, and it's very easy to overlook the traffic factor.
My question, I think, goes more to time. timing, because I'm not sure exactly how you were envisioning that, but just from a policy process, you know, council, I believe, canceled their next meeting.
Yes.
About the one after that, so they're not even gonna
September 4th.
Yeah, so they wouldn't at least see this until into September. And to get that even up on there, I would guess they'd be looking at October. So I don't know, does that fit the
I believe right coinciding here? With the start of,
your
not
goal
before
is,
then.
Right, your goal is that yes. School's in session before the study is done. And
correct.
That's what I wanted to be sure is what your thinking was. Because in my head, that's
yes.
That's a given. they couldn't possibly even do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So do we want to reword that? We're not going to make the prior to school start.
With the school, with the 2013 school year.
Yeah. Gary's concern was that it
chapter school upon or after,
right.
I guess,
okay.
I could amend.
So, do you want to restate your motion?
Motion for the city to provide funding for a traffic corridor study of Southeast 140th Street and North Bend Way interchange, coinciding with the start or soon after thereof of the 2013 Snoqualmie Valley School District school year.
Jim, you agreed to the
second. A friendly amendment accepted.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we approve item number 5, amendments to the comprehension plan, land use designated map, zoning map concerning the WashDOT Tanner Pit property, as amended.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. And you're saying as amended, what did we amend?
Sorry, as submitted.
As submitted. Okay, so
thank you.
The motion is
to accept
to approve amendments to comprehensive plan, land use designation map, and zoning map concerning WashDOT Tanner Pit property. Copy number 4. Is that fair?
That is exactly
yes.
Right.
And the second.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I've got a few thoughts and comments on this one. I happened to be at council the other night, and one thing that caught my attention and made me think a little more about this one was Councilmember Cook made a statement during the evening on not on this item, on a different zoning change proposal, stating a strong preference for commercial properties over residential. Citing the tax revenue implications of that, by which I assume he meant that he felt that commercial properties brought in more revenue than residential. He did not state such, but he was citing tax revenues. And that got me to thinking again about our commercial zones and downzoning them. I was noting as I was rereading this the discussion, which is in the staff's findings of fact on the second page under the impacts of the proposed amendments, environmental impacts. It's discussing that it is currently in its highest and best use as EP1. In the number 2 in economic impacts, that we're discussing that it is much more adjacent to a lot of residential, and therefore that was one of the things favoring it. Yet I note that we're also acknowledging that there's actually commercial operating right now next to it. So it seemed it didn't quite work for me to say, well, gee, this area we ought to convert it because nobody's going to want to go commercial there versus East North Bend Way. Yet we've already said, well, actually, right next here is ongoing commercial concern. Again, I'm not sure what I'm doing with that other than saying, it's got me thinking again. And this one, as opposed to the last proposal, I'm just struggling a little bit more with, because this is for low density, of which we have more, I believe, potential development than we are by the Growth Management Act looking to absorb. And we certainly have a lot of potential infill. And saying all of that, I'm not sure that I would oppose this change. It's just troubling me.
May I speak in favor of the motion, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
So I kind of look at this area as something that's been undeveloped for over 20 years, and as a resident close to that area, I've walked by and noticed the wildlife activity, including the breeding grounds that take place, and I can't foresee that its best use is going to be commercial property because of the impacts. Also, the way this property is located, I believe there is a drain or a wash that separates it from commercial use, so it doesn't exactly butt up against two, but has a buffered area. And I think that while I'd like to see some mixed-use areas, and I'd like to think about that in certain areas, I believe that this one really fits well as a single-family change. I think it provides more connectivity for the residents out there. I think the location of the Tanner Park, whatever it's going to be called, is nice for the residents that are going to be located there, especially if we do high density across the street. So I guess that's pretty much my thoughts.
I understand everyone agree with that.
Call the question.
I've got one more question.
Sorry.
But I appreciate that.
I'm just looking at the clock, man. You know, like I was in.
Can I
carry on?
Or can I
withdraw?
Did you call the question? It's done. I just wanted to be sure. So this is the piece we're talking about.
Yes.
Am I right? Does this one have?
That's a big vacant lot it's used for storage of RVs and things, but it's mostly empty.
But it's because the actual RV, the build out is on this one, correct?
Yeah.
Right? And I don't recall if there's anything on either one of those. But
I think there's some single family homes.
Single family homes there, right, on Tanner. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the question in my mind, which is going to sound really odd versus my last comments, is why aren't we looking to change that and make that one?
I think we would if it weren't developed, you know, so we'd be creating a non-conforming use.
Also proximity to North Bend Way. Yeah. That's a little closer to North Bend Way than the other, and that one has potential access also off of Tanner, where the other one is just off of 140th.
So you're thinking that if a developer were to actually look to build, they would just take both parcels and build right through? Is that what you're suggesting?
Not necessarily, but just that it has more access to busier streets than the other one on 140th.
And they could provide more.
I'm sorry, Mike, but I don't get. This is more access than this corner.
Not from the other way, though, from Tanner.
You're saying, from Tanner for commercial? I would think they would not want
access
to have commercial
right against the river.
There's not much primary there. Would be off of.
That would be good high density.
It's just to me, it's just a logic question. I'm content to allow it to come forward in its own time. If it does, I would be surprised to have an applicant in here the same as the earlier one tonight saying, give me some options.
So for connectivity, what I'm thinking of is the Tanglewood connection that would join the lot and provide then a more structured development on residential point of view, and then adjoining to those residential structures below. The proximity to the river and that Southeast Tanner Road is quite narrow and not friendly to heavy traffic.
This is the Sigali, correct?
Which one?
This big chunk. This real big
chunk. How many units are there?
160 is what
is
roughly.
Is the 156. Is the primary access assumed to be Tanner? Or is there connectivity through
both?
Both. Okay. So we have road connections coming out. So this Tanner map doesn't show. This is Tanner 2, right? These pieces.
Yeah. Yes.
And all the way to here. And then is this the Miners or what? What's
no Miners is all the way over the east end of the city.
This one.
Yeah.
Okay. What, well, these
existing.
Are these are existing,
mm-hmm.
right? Right.
Another like acre.
Yeah.
Acre
okay.
Ahead.
Okay.
Just to clarify the proposed the Tanner Pit site, if it was LDR, there wouldn't be. We have the in Tanner Wood. We have that western road connection potential. It, from what we've been shown so far, it wouldn't be able to connect through a road. It would have a trail access, but there's just such a
oh, wow.
steep, even with all the fill that's going to have to take place to develop that site, there's still a huge grade. So there.
And so by the wildlife corridor, you
yeah.
wouldn't necessarily want a connection right
yeah.
there.
You're saying down to the Tanner Road?
Down to the Tanner Pit site from Tanner Wood neighborhood. That
oh,
that
oh,
road would
oh,
not
see,
be connected.
The
what I was thinking.
Eastern border you're talking about.
Here or that
yep,
one?
That
yeah,
one.
That drops off
mm-hmm.
pretty good, right?
It does. And we still put the road in there just in case, but it mm-hmm. doesn't look like it's going to happen
okay.
in all actuality.
Well, there's a King County yard that keeps dumping a lot of fill by me, right up right by Twin Falls Middle School. Seriously. It's a mountain now.
Well, that's my question.
Call the question.
Call all in favor.
Aye.
Opposed. None. Motion carries unanimous. Abstain.
No, I meant I didn't just say it. Aye.
Aye.
Sorry.
Just want to make sure. I'm reading 4-0, right? Stay there. All right. Agenda item number 6, Plan Commission discussion recommendation. Amendments to Comprehensive Plan Land Use Designation Map and Zoning Map concerning city-owned properties and the North Penn Post Office addresses dockets 6, 7, and 8.
So Jimmy introduced this one to you guys at your last meeting, but provided updates on what has changed in this sense. We thought that the comments that were provided at the public hearing were very valid about having the Parks Commission also consider this, given that it does involve property that could be considered as a part of the park, and then also not quite knowing what's going to happen with the design of that intersection with the right-hand turn lane. We felt it was appropriate just to drop off that particular property, the corner of the park in Bendigo. And we'll take a look at that further. We'll have the Parks Commission consider it. Depending on the outcome of those things, it may come back to you. It may just be dropped at that point. If it comes back, we'll bring back with the staff report for your consideration at that time. Other than that, nothing else has changed in the staff report, and the other properties would move forward with the recommendation.
I can say that I've been getting my ear bent quite a bit on this particular issue around, and particularly around that particular piece there where the museum sits. It's good that we're stepping back and looking at that one a little closer. I've also heard from a number of citizens in regard to the piece of property. Well, it's not called out on our docket map, but the eastern end parking lot, which is
eastern end. Which one you guys
is it? So up where Rivers is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Parking.
That one we actually can't rezone because it's not actually a parcel. It's part of the right of way.
It's part of the right. Okay.
So that's another issue that we'd have to kind of figure out.
All right. So is that one being dropped then from consideration, or
it hasn't been considered at all in the process?
Right? So I may have gotten confused because I've heard so much about this one that my understanding was council was recommending surplusing that along with these other two.
They had discussion. That wasn't ever submitted as a docket, so it wasn't considered through this process.
Okay. Good. So that's not part, because that's one where I was getting a lot of luck. And then I'm kind of getting some mixed feedback on the other item in docket 6, the one that's next to the Moose Lodge, as far as some feeling that it should be improved as parking and others feeling that it could be surplus. So the feedback that I'm getting is kind of mixed on that particular one. The number one comment I get is, oh, that's city parking. Right? Nobody knows it because all we have is a broken down sign leaning against the building.
There
were two emails that were submitted in favor of that particular amendment. Those are in your packet.
As far as
they were in the packet last time.
Converting it, right?
Yeah.
So no action tonight, just that was just updated.
No, we are looking for your recommendation.
We are looking for recommendations. Mm-hmm. The amended recommendation that dropped. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for recommendation regarding docket 6, just the one parcel?
No, this would be for the post office, the two public works properties. One of the public works properties is HDR currently, the other is LDR. Both of those to be changed to public facilities.
Docket 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the lot next to the Moose Lodge.
Yes, no, I'm sorry. And that's what I was referring to, the one parcel of docket 6, 8, and 7. Mm-hmm.
I don't probably next to the post office, so my comments should be filtered and I won't be voting on that. But I can tell you that, to me, each of these makes a lot of sense. And to the comments that citizens have made that don't quite fit what it may end up happening, in my mind, the correction to highest and best use based on staff's logic is still the right thing to do. It creates the opportunity that doesn't exist there now and makes things fall in line with the bigger picture in the city. And I think that's our job. So I'll leave that part of it. So that, to me, it's a no-brainer.
My concern still remains with just loss of parking downtown. Even if it's unknown parking, it could be known parking. I still have interest I'd like to see the city, moving in a positive statement on how they're going to address parking within the concept of the new Civic Plaza if that moves forward. My understanding is that Docket 6 is fairly well related to looking to surplus that as part of the funding mechanism for New Civic Plaza, so I would like to see them formally tied together. That being said, that's really more public comment. I'm not, at this time, looking to make it part of a motion. Gary?
I'm going to say that I kind of agree with Jim that it seems a little bit more housekeeping than any kind of major change, and getting the property zoned correctly and their highest best use, I agree with. So if the chair would entertain a motion. And I motion to approve the amendments to comprehensive plan, land use designation map, and zoning map concerning city-owned properties in the North Bend Post Office, addresses docket 6, 7, and 8 of the 2013 docket list.
Just gets a second on that one again. Only discussion I would have, and as presented tonight, that has already dropped.
It has, yeah. There's a note in the staff report saying that.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Before we get to adjournment, I've got just a couple items I wanted to share. Anybody else?
Let the record show staying, please.
Yep. Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
Just following your line.
First off, I want to know, thank you, Jamie, for getting this permits report out. I found it fascinating. Really interesting read. And it does, I think, it's very valuable to us as we're considering zoning changes and all the different things that come before us to be aware of what's that really translate and look like.
Yeah. Well, I extend the thanks on that to Tom Marr from our office, who puts that together. And he's going to be doing that monthly now, so we'll include that in every other month.
Tom's a rock star.
Second.
You hear that, Tom?
No, he stopped listening a long time ago to you guys.
Good information.
I wanted to make sure I understood a couple of the definitions. About the fourth
item in the building section. Total building permit and impact fee revenue, a little over $2 million. That's more than single-family residential.
Correct.
Permits, right? Yeah. What are some of the other things that that's...
Martel drugs.
So there's transportation impact fees, fire impact fees, those are definitely not commercial development. Stormwater impact fees based on impervious surface, any kind of development.
And on a single family permit, that's all rolled into one, though, correct?
No, it's not. It's each your levy.
So, and that's the collective revenue. But when we're saying, okay, so, well, and I guess maybe the question is even more about the first one, when we say total building permits issued 176 versus 67 single family residential.
A building permit could be an addition, an alteration,
a
roof permit,
tenant improvements, things, along with including the Bartels and the commercial pieces, right? Okay. So, it makes the math a little bit tougher, I think, because I was trying to get to the what's the typical permit and impact fee per single family residence?
Roughly $18,000. Yeah, that sound right?
That's about where I was guessing, because I knew it was somewhere between 11 and 30.
We have, and we have that kind of on a sheet in our office that bulleted out.
About $18,000 per single family residence coming in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I noted that I just need to cite this for my own edification, if no one else is. So, looking at the Tannerwood and Cedar Falls, Tannerwood about 80% build out, Cedar Falls about 71% build out at this point. With the pipeline in place, looking at 452 on page one, so over 450 lots on page one. You add the other ones that are underway and are soon to submit, I guess is the category. So we've got over 400 submitted, another 250 some on the way, so over 700 units there. I took a wild guess and said that's like 30% growth potential for the city in the next several years. Mm-hmm. That's a whole lot, right? About 1,700 some new residents and a popular factor of 2.5 per household. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of new folks coming at us. And at 18,000 per, that's 1.2 million. Did I do that math right? 1,000 times 704 units. Yeah, somewhere over 1.2, almost $1.3 million. Doesn't seem like chump change to me. No. It seems like pretty good revenue coming into the city.
Not all that comes to the city. A lot of that goes to the school district alongside fire and rescue.
The 18,000 includes the schools?
Yes.
Make a comment on that, just the developer's 2 cents. That 18,000 per unit, to when we're talking about the citizens, the reality of that's income to the city, but it's probably almost triple that cost to the person buying that unit, because the impact gets paid in partial up front at permit, right? So the developer builder is carrying that fee in through and all the way until he gets sold.
Passed on.
So it's not just passed on, it's exponential by the time the end user gets the product.
So carrying cost is what you're referring to. We dealt with that on Suquamish Ridge, where the developer agreement had a lot of the fee being paid at preliminary plat. So talk about an extra year and a half of carry time often. So and that got recognized, and the city over there it to permit, and I know that's where we've been, so permit. So, but yeah, carrying costs really adds up for a builder. it's the homeowner that pays it.
The idea of impact fees, though, is that development pays for development, and then it's not burdened on the backs of the existing residents.
Yep. Yep. Do we have provisions at all in that process that there's a kind of a tiered, you know, if an applicant comes in with, I don't know, a reasonable number, 20 homes, is that 20 times 18 to get the ball rolling? Or can he phase that?
You don't pay the impact fees until you pick up your building permit, but they are all due at that point. Yeah. We don't allow any delay in payment.
Which is, it seems to be the only logical way to do it is a permit. I mean, the only other way that I would see a developer asking for is, well, it'd be nice to see it assessed at occupancy.
And that gets really tricky.
Give me my occupancy permit. Yeah. I'll pay my fees.
For what it's worth, I'm a fan of, particularly in a smaller scale builder. If somebody's going to come in and build 200 homes, it's a different animal, different financing, et cetera. But if somebody's in a short plot scenario, that'll start or stop the whole project. And I think my experience has been with a smaller builder, because they have to spend that money up front, they're looking for other ways to save. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, they find ways that you're mad at you rather they didn't. So, just putting a note out there to keep thinking as we get the smart guys coming.
Well, I think it's similar to the comment that I've harped on many a time, and so I'll take that opportunity again to say we need a graduated fee structure. When we're here philosophically setting a vision for our city that we want to be able to accommodate low-impact development, infill, smaller footprints of the homes create that higher density and create the kind of homes where the everyday living person who takes care of us every day can live, it's an even bigger impact, right? Because those are the projects that really go dead. $18,000 on a $600,000-$700,000 home is a hurt, but as a percentage, pretty small. When you start making that on a $200,000 home, it's huge.
Yeah.
And it stops a lot of potential in the ground. And so, again, I'll implore staff to come back to us with some sort of or look at, from a policy standpoint, what can you do to come back with us with a proposal for where we could encourage?
We did discuss that at council committee, informally at a meeting, but we did have receptive ears to that.
So excellent. Love your
amendment. I would say a best approach, because it's already in place, is that your inspection periods, foundation, all the way through the mechanical process, there are certain trigger points.
Yeah.
The financing is already set up that way. The builder's getting money as he builds to completion. If that number was spread out over those same increments, mm-hmm. you'd have the system would just fall into place.
Well, that's certainly one approach, but what I'm suggesting is a totally different fee structure. I'm saying that there's one fee structure for low-density residential, and there's a different fee structure when you're talking about high-density residential and multifamily, right? And particularly if you're looking to build a true affordable housing community, there ought to be a break in there.
Instead of the density piece, I would go down the road, and it'll take all night. This is kind of a fun conversation. Maybe that's the benchmark conversation, it's all around affordability focus versus density focus. So we don't restrict the density with this game. We say, look, if you're working on the affordability piece, we're going to help you by doing this.
Right, which there aren't a whole lot of builders like to go that route. But if they did, we should have a mechanism for encouraging and rewarding. So,
and I'll say one more thing. That actually could work in a mixed-use plat. You've got
extremely
a certain chunk of that plat that is focused on entry level or low income, you can make it all fit together. Mm-hmm. I mean the cities, you guys can't pay attention to that. You the permit collection and the fees and making sure things get paid for, that's important. But that's an upfront hammer for the developer. Some of them are fine with it and others really won't even go there. Can't. So I'll get off my box.
I got one more. I just wanted to share with you when I was at council, and I hope staff knows the outcome, because for the life of me, I can't remember one of the items, but council took up actions that we had forwarded to them, one of which was the recommendation to change the zoning in the Torgerson parcel, and council did not pass that. They did send it, though, back to work study for further evaluation. And there was not a consensus within council on which way they wanted to go on that. There, and that was actually because Mr. Torgerson had spoken to us and he spoke to council as well about the previous commercial zoning that he felt he had, that brought up the question where some council was saying, well, why isn't this commercial done? And others were saying, well, I don't know that we should be changing it from high density. So there was quite a split. So they remanded that one back to work study. And the second item, they did the same with which?
CenturyLink.
CenturyLink. Thank you. Gosh, I couldn't remember. So the CDC committee took the opposite view that Planning Commission did and was recommending passage. But again, there was a pretty good division within council, and they sent that one back to work study as well. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And they had the same questions in that regard. Their question, their number one question was, why aren't they asking for annexation? And so they urged you. That's what I wanted.
Hey, that's what.
Right? And that was the question. So I wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Yeah. I got a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
And just a reminder, our schedule is to have the August 22nd meeting off.
Thank you for the reminder.
Dang, I forgot to go there before we adjourn. Now we can.